single Bitcoin's worth $5,700, surging in value, exploding tenfold over the last year. Bitcoin's lack of regulation and volatility means institutional investors such as pension funds, insurance companies, and mutual funds are still keeping away. Bitcoin's total value is just under $100 billion. That's bigger than Morgan Stanley. But its volatility has been a roller coaster, losing a third of its value in only 2 weeks last month, then surging again to new highs.
The death of old media, the death of any particular sector of media is certainly not true. And you look at the history. We went from newspapers to magazines, and newspapers survived, magazines to radio, radio to television, television to cable television, and now streaming television. And new brands get created. Old brands sometimes have their growth temporarily interrupted, but you know, we don't have a history of media brands going away.
The core issues that have now, you know, been afflicting Chipotle for several quarters just aren't going away.
Exactly. The street's always looking forward, right? And those things that you mentioned happened already, right? And it happened to a lot of chains, right? It's always about a simple menu, and now that they're trying basically a lot of different things, they're throwing a lot of different things at the wall to try to get people back in the stores, and so far it hasn't worked. You know, time is really going to be the key. It's going to take time.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's October 25th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another business day and another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got a great broadcast for you today. A little bit later in the program, John Haber will be here. He's the founder and CEO of Spend Management Experts. We're going to be talking about the business of transportation and logistics, getting stuff here and there, to and fro, and what's behind all of that. We'll talk to John in our second segment this morning. We'll bring in our first guest momentarily to talk about degrees and whether or not they're standing in the way of actually hiring qualified people for jobs, especially young people. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Asian shares edged higher with scant leads from news headlines to move the markets. Investors are eyeing upcoming corporate earnings reports and U.S. politics for clues about the next Federal Reserve chair. The Nikkei Index in Japan has added just about a tenth of a percent early on in its trading, but now is off about a half a percent, down 97 points. The Hang Seng up 147. That's good for a half a percent. The Shanghai's up just a few points. In Europe this morning, markets are generally higher, with the DAX up about 10 points. The CAC is up just about 14 points. The FTSE in London is lower. Futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street, flat to negative open. Dow futures off about 2 points right now. Oil is trading lower this morning by about a half a percent, or 23 cents, at $52.24 a barrel. Some stories that we're watching for you. Big earnings week this week. A number of big companies, including some Chicago companies, are out with earnings. Yesterday, it was an amazing day for Caterpillar. At one point, their shares were as high, up almost 7%, adding hundreds of points, helping to add 100 or so points to the Dow. Caterpillar's third quarter profit surged on demand for construction equipment. The Peoria-based company boosted its guidance, too, citing strong oil and gas markets in North America, along with construction in China. Its shares surged, ending up about 5% yesterday, up about $6.56 a share. The Republican-led Senate narrowly voted last night to repeal banking rules that would let consumers band together to sue their bank or credit card company to resolve financial disputes. Vice President Pence had to cast the tie-breaking vote in a 50-50 tie. Banking industry had been lobbying hard to roll back regulation from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The Bureau had moved to ban most types of mandatory arbitration clauses because found in the fine print of many agreements that you probably sign when you enter into a checking account or even get a credit card. The vote reflects the effort of the Trump administration and congressional Republicans to undo regulations that the GOP argues harms the free market. Dismissed by degrees, a new report outlines the need to look beyond the degree, the college degree, to close the opportunity divide. The study authors are with us this morning to talk a little bit about this. Elise Rosenblum is principal of Grads for Life, and Joe Fuller is professor of MGMT Management Practice and Harvard at Harvard Business School. and they're with us this morning. Thanks for being with us. First of all, Joe, let me bring you in first and ask you about this. Are we talking about high school degrees or college degrees or both?
Steve, there's a marked tendency for employers to require a college degree for jobs that historically didn't have such a requirement. So the effect is that people with a high school degree or an associate's degree or a certificate can get frozen out of jobs that were traditionally open to them as employers raise the bar in terms of educational background for applicants.
Are we talking how many jobs potentially are we seeing get frozen out of? I know there are millions of job openings. Can some of those jobs be filled by some of these people?
Yes. We did an extensive analysis, and it turns out that currently there are about 6.2 million people employed in jobs that are where those job descriptions are changing and the requirements are being raised. That's despite the fact that the incumbent people in the job today who are successfully employed don't have a college degree. So there's a degree gap opening up where the percentage of people who are in a job that don't have a degree is very high, but the percentage of job postings that require a degree is going up markedly.
Elise, what is the message then to employers as they read and hear this report?
So I think the message to employers is that you're overly narrowing your talent pipeline, and it's not really getting you anything. You're paying a premium. You're paying additional wages to people that have a college degree. These folks that have college degrees tend to leave faster. And in our survey, the employers tell us that they're seeing equal productivity for people with and without a college degree. So really, you're fishing in a small pond. You're paying extra for the fish, and you're not really getting anything extra. So the message is for employers to take a hard look at these middle-skilled jobs, understand what skills are required, and then think about whether their job descriptions need to be adapted. And, you know, look for different ways to expand that talent pipeline. At Grads of Life, we encourage employers to work with community colleges and community-based organizations to find young adults who have the skills and competencies. And when you bring them into your firm, they are going to be motivated, they're going to stay longer, and they're likely to be equally productive as a college grad.
The middle skill positions that we're talking about would include what?
Well, there are all sorts of everyday jobs that people will be familiar with. So, for example, historically, most first-line supervisors for office administrative staff, for production workers on construction sites, are middle-skilled jobs, ones that require something more than a high school diploma but less than a college degree. So also things like sales reps, executive assistants, and credit authorizers. People are involved in measurement, often higher-level production jobs. And as you look across the gamut, what we're seeing is this degree inflation is occurring nationwide and across sectors. So it's not just isolated to one or two different types of positions or just a few industries. It's really a national phenomenon.
Joe, Elise, hang on with us. We're going to take a quick break. We're on with Joe Fuller. He's a professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. And Elise Rosenblum is a principal of Grads for Life. And we'll continue our conversation with them. We'll see what this report will mean with the next steps of how it might be put into action.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the bulls were back in action on Tuesday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed 168 points higher at 23,441. The S&P 500 advanced 4 points. The NASDAQ finished up 11.5 at 65.98. Twitter says it will provide more information about political ads on its service, including who's funding them and how they're targeted. Lawmakers are considering a bill to bring more transparency to online political ads in an attempt to reduce the influence of foreign entities on U.S. elections. Another sign of retail trouble. Lord & Taylor is selling its flagship store on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, but keeping some space as a scaled-down store. The century-old building will be converted into a corporate office-sharing space. And Best Buy is expanding an after-school program for underprivileged teenagers. Best Buy's tech centers host nonprofit organizations that let teens explore technology. The current 11 centers will grow to 60 over the next 3 years. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 524. Thanks for being with us here this morning on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. We're on this morning talking about Dismissed by Degrees, a new report that outlines a need to look beyond the degree, the normal college degree, to give more people opportunities in the workplace. Elise Rosenblum is here, a principal of Grads for Life. Joe Fuller is here as well, professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. Elise, how do we put this report into action? How is it being rolled out, and how are you reaching out to employers on this?
So we're going to be working with employers across the country to both highlight what's already working so companies can learn from each other. As Joe said, the degree inflation is cutting across sectors, and we're seeing companies across sectors get innovative about their hiring strategies. So in the financial services sectors, we see companies like State Street and JP Morgan Chase. In retail, we see companies like Gap and CVS. In healthcare, we see companies like Lifespan and LifePoint. And what they're doing is really taking a hard look at their middle-skilled jobs, understanding what competencies are required, looking at both hard skills and soft skills, and then working with partners in their community to make sure that young adults get the training they need to come into the workplace with those skills. Companies are also leaning in and providing mentoring to those young adults and making sure hiring managers are taking a close look at providing ongoing training and support so that those young adults can stay and grow in the companies, leading to a real win-win in terms of increased retention for the employer and access to not just a job for the young adult, but a job that gets them on a career path with a W-2 that grows over time.
I see a couple of Chicago-based companies in here as well, Chicago-based Boeing among those companies. Is it going to take a complete rethinking of job openings and postings on the other side of this, people who are looking for work? Often they don't get past that first line that says requirements, bachelor's degree. Does that need to change too?
Yes, it does. And you can see, Steve, employers like Walmart just eliminating all such requirements of applicants. And this is going to come to a head because the unemployment rate for college graduates is less than 2.5%. And many people don't realize that only 1 in 3 Americans has a college degree. So when you raise the bar in terms of degree requirements, you're freezing out 2/3 of your potential workforce. And as employers find it harder and harder to source college talent, they're going to have to revisit their job descriptions, but also just the fundamental logic of why are we requiring a degree for this job? Can't we find other ways to instill the skills and competencies in someone so they can do this job effectively and let us escape some of these very, very significant systems costs that affect companies that fall into this trap of assuming that everyone's got to have a college degree?
Well, one easy thing that companies can do is take a look and see if they're using online application processes that automatically screen out applicants that lack that 4-year degree. About 90% of large companies use those systems, and they're just narrowing their pipeline so dramatically that they're missing candidates that probably could be great employees, but they never even get a chance to look at them.
Yeah, because when employers make it harder for themselves to find jobs, find people to fill jobs, isn't that making their work not only harder but more expensive?
Absolutely. We, in talking to employers that hire both college and non-college graduates for jobs, a significant majority said that they do pay more to the college grad for doing the exact same work, and there were significant amounts ranging from 11 to 33%. So right off the bat, employers are raising their own costs due to a lack of imagination about how they can source talent.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just to add on to that, not only are they paying more, they're not really seeing any benefit. They're seeing, in fact, they tell us that college graduates have higher turnover rates, have lower employee engagement rates, and they see about equal productivity between college grads and non-college grads. So it's really, it's ironic that they're paying extra but not really getting anything for that extra cost.
Elise, Joe, appreciate you being with us here this morning on The Opening Bell. We're going to link out to this report and your efforts in this area, and we appreciate the information.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for your time.
Elise Rosenblum, a principal of Grads for Life. Joe Fuller, professor of management practice at Harvard Business School. Dismissed by degrees is the report. Again, we'll link that out on our Twitter account and with our podcast this morning of The Opening Bell at WGNRadio.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's InnoMinute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Peapod, the online grocery delivery company founded in 1989, is moving its headquarters from Skokie to Chicago's West Loop. The company will take up 55,000 square feet on the sixth floor at 300 South Riverside Plaza. Today, the city broke ground on the Hatchery Chicago, a new food and beverage business incubator in East Garfield Park. The 67,000 square foot facility will support local food and beverage entrepreneurs and will hold approximately 100 startup founders. And Northwestern University announced that it is offering a master's degree in artificial intelligence in a 15-month program that will begin in fall of 2018. They expect the first class to include only about 10 to 15 students, but have plans to increase it to about 40 in coming years. That's today's InnoMinute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 5:41 here on our Wednesday edition of the program. Our focus now turns to the business of transportation and logistics. John Haber is with us. He's the founder and CEO of Spend Management Experts based in Atlanta. John, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good having you here with us. I'm going to mention that John was recently named one of the top entrepreneurs of the year by the Metro Atlanta Chamber. And you've been in transportation and logistics your whole career. Congratulations on all of the success.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
What is the biggest news these days in transportation and logistics?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things going on in transportation and logistics. There are a lot of moving parts. One of the things that we're paying very close attention to is the increasingly blurred lines between some of the big box retailers becoming more logistics organizations. If you look at the intense competition between, say, Amazon and Walmart and Target, those organizations are no longer just retailers. They're fastly becoming more logistics types of organizations. You look at Walmart, who's just acquired a regional parcel delivery carrier based out of New York City. That's actually called Parcel. You look at Target has actually bought a logistics platform called Grand Junction, which allows faster routing guidelines and helps with the deliveries on the last mile delivery. You look at Amazon, who's really building out their logistics network. And so what we see is that traditional retailers are now moving into competition with the UPSs and the FedExes and the United States Postal Services.
Is that a good thing, John, or is it? What are the challenges involved in that? Because you know, people will argue that nobody can do it like the companies UPS and the people who do this every day. What are the challenges for these retailers getting into this business?
Well, I think the first question is yes, it is a good thing because unlike other geographies and markets like Asia and Europe, there's a lack of competition within small parcel delivery in the domestic U.S. And so as more competition moves in to that area, you'll see the prices come down. So I think it's a good thing for the consumers. You're right. It is very, very difficult to duplicate the delivery services provided by UPS, by FedEx, by the post office, who have developed their networks over decades and have invested tremendous amount of capital and have delivery on-time percentages in the high 90 percentile. So it's a very big challenge for them as they move out of their core businesses into a business that's fairly new to them. They've obviously had to work with logistics, in the retail environment, but now they're really being challenged to become logistics companies in addition to selling their products.
Yeah, in all of that, you see, let's take Amazon, for instance. They even have their own aircraft now, so they're probably the best example of one of these retailers that's out in front of all the rest.
Yeah, Amazon is trying to move a lot of their volume in-house. They've got their own airline. They have their own freight forwarding license, which means they're moving ocean freight. They've got over 4,000 truck leases. So you see trucks moving down the highway, 53-foot trailers branded Amazon Prime. And you've got Amazon out delivering on the last mile and Amazon trucks. And so they really have moved into becoming a full-service logistics company. You've also got Fulfillment by Amazon, whereby they're doing the fulfillment for third-party sellers on their marketplace and shipping it out and making the decisions as to how the shipments are routed. They could deliver themselves, but they also rely heavily on the big three parcel carriers, which is an interesting situation because they're both a competitor and are also the largest customer for those three organizations.
What are the technical challenges of doing all this? We look, for instance, this holiday season, more people are probably going to be buying online than in store this holiday, and that includes from those big box retailers that you were talking about. How has all of this extra package delivery impacted the infrastructure of transportation and logistics?
It's had a huge impact on the business of transportation. You're right. We have seen that for the first time ever, NRF is forecasting that e-commerce online sales will outpace brick-and-mortar sales, which means a huge influx of delivery on the small parcel side. That's the primary method of delivery for most of the stuff that's purchased online. What it creates is a need for very accurate forecasting. If you look back to 2013, where Amazon essentially blew out the parcel carrier networks because of what we would say is demand outpacing what was forecasted and carriers not having the capacity and staffing available to move that volume, there's a very delicate balance. And so the big three parcel carriers work on a weekly basis. They started working, you know, as early as July with retailers on what their forecasts are. They're constantly tweaking it, but those forecasts have to be pretty accurate. And if they're not accurate, they've built in penalties in the contracts where they're going to charge. They're going to hit retailers with surcharges if the forecasts are off by 15% on the upside or the downside, to hold them accountable for providing them accurate information so that they can secure the accurate capacity to move the volume.
As we look to the future, one would think that this is a good place to maybe consider a career, finding a job. But on the other hand, we see all the technology, automation. Even Boeing is putting together planes that fly themselves, probably for cargo at first. But what does the future hold here, John? Is it going to be all automation and robots and drones?
You're going to see a lot of robots. You're going to see drones eventually, although there have been some setbacks recently on approval of drones. We still think that the drones are a few years off. We think that even with the improvements in technology and automation, the job growth will continue to be very robust within the supply chain and with specifically within transportation, distribution, and fulfillment. As volumes continue to grow, you can't automate everything. And you also need smart people to make management decisions and manage the processes. So we don't see a huge decline in the number of people that are going to be staffed within that sector. It may just change. The types of jobs may change over time.
John, we have just about a minute or so left, but I know a lot of cities you probably interact with are vying for this Amazon second headquarters. Have you been able to handicap this race at all? Who do you think is best positioned for this?
Right now, you know, we're looking at a core five. We think that Dallas, is a big player for it. We think Atlanta is well positioned for it. Boston has been mentioned as a leader at one point. Amazon came out and denied that. Washington, D.C., New York City, Austin, Texas, and Chicago. When Chicago's got a great bid. They've offered over $2 billion in tax incentives. They put together a 10 proposed site location plan. So I think Chicago's got a shot. I don't think that when it boils down to it, I don't know that Chicago will get it, but we think they certainly have a shot.
It's certainly going to see how the how it all plays out. It's an interesting contest to watch. John, very good of you to be with us this morning. Interesting conversation. Come back again, please.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, John Haber, the founder and CEO of Spend Management Experts. You can find more about them online, spendmanagementexperts.com, and you can follow on Twitter at spend_MGMT, short for management.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures flat to negative on Wall Street. Dow futures down a point. S&P and NASDAQ futures down single digits as well. The latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. What happened to the cattle market yesterday? Live cattle closed sharply higher. The reason, they say, short covering in anticipation of maybe steady to better cash prices later this week. Fund buying did contribute to the advance after some contracts topped technical resistance levels on their way to new highs. And, of course, the October cattle contract expires on the 31st, and it finished $2.10 higher per hundredweight. The feeder cattle contract for October gained $1.52 yesterday, and even the hog futures traded higher. The December lean hog contract up 60 cents a hundredweight, closing barely above $64. But then we take a look at the grain market. Soybeans particularly lower yesterday. Harvest picking up steam, although it will slow down after the rains. But the November soybean contract ended down 4 cents a bushel, while December corn ended up a penny and a half, and December wheat ended 2 cents a bushel higher. Well, it's off to Indianapolis a little bit later today to join the 64,000 FFA members from around all 50 states, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands to attend that convention. It will take place starting this evening and continuing through Saturday afternoon when they announce the new national FFA officer team. We'll be there for that, and we'll be there for tonight's opening night ceremony. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuels.
Thanks, Orion. You as well on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, October 25th. A couple of economic reports due today, including the government reporting on durable goods for September. Also, a report from the Commerce Department on new home sales. The new home sales for September. The durable goods comes from the Commerce Department. Germany's IFO Institute releases its monthly business confidence index. We'll get a look at the Europe economy with that. Lots of earnings continue today, including Coca-Cola and Visa and a couple of Illinois companies, Chicago area companies, Walgreens in there, Chicago-based Boeing has its earnings report out today. The Congressional Gold Medal will be presented to a Filipino World War II vet, and the hearing on the economic outlook with CEA Chairman Kevin Hassett is this morning. The annual Congressional Correspondents' Dinner also happening. Just some of the things that could move the markets Wednesday, October 25th.